Enough. We are finally up on the air. It's Total Information Radio. New software, new hardware, new everything for the broadcast this week and for Revere Radio Network. If you've been listening today, you notice we got some new promos. You got to hand it to the guys in Austin. They're getting like Meat Space sponsors down there. Weird Magazine. Check that out. And check out Elysium Nightclub. And, I don't know, I've never been there. I hope it's not one of those clubs where, you can't get in if you don't wear the right kind of shoes. I doubt it is. But I think, I went to another nightclub called Elysium once. Anyway. So what's going on tonight is you can call in at 1-877-REVERE-0 if you want. We'll cover some news real quick and then I'm going to play a lecture by an Iranian gentleman named, I believe his name is Armin Sarhanian, and he gave an interesting talk at the National Press Club on August 8th. The focus of the talk was went through several hundred years of the history of British intelligence services in the West generally, messing with the development of Islam. And along with the development of Persia / Iran, and he took a digression that was my part that I found the most interesting, talking about the history of Islam and what he thinks was going on with Mohammed and the Quran and all that stuff. I looked him up later. He's a secularist of some sort. I believe he's half Iranian, Persian, and half Armenian. And I gather he might have been raised in the Islam there. But anyway, and it ties into topics we've explored on this program before about doppelgangers, and even, you know, when you go back 1500 years, you barely even need the doppelganger to look very much like the original person, because you go from town to town, if it's, you know, you just say, oh, this is the guy, this is Muhammad, and no one in Medina or whatever had ever heard of him. So we're going to play that, unless you want to call in and change the topic at 1-877-REVERE-0. The news today, there are a couple interesting things. American Airlines confirms flights 11 and 77 did not fly on 9/11. This is on dailycoast.com. And basically, there's this thing called Wikiscanner out there now. And if you know what Wikipedia is, it's the online encyclopedia where anyone can post stuff, but their editors will change it eventually to the party line. But anyway, you can either register as a user to post there, or you can not register. But if you don't register, what's published as the author of your change to the encyclopedia entry is your IP address, your internet protocol address. And a lot of these are static. If you're still on a dial-up of some sort, it'll change from each time you dial in, except it will still show up as say AOL or whatever. Whereas if you're hardwired, pretty much these days, you're going to have a relatively static IP address, and from that, if people know, they can trace, you know, to an office building, to a government agency, what the number is, and it's, you know, like 77.69.190.32, like that. And anyway, someone wrote a program that automatically scans through everything on Wikipedia and collates from what companies and institutions, organizations, who's been editing the Wikipedia entries. And one that was traced back to American Airlines was someone at American edited their own entry, and it turns out the IP just traces to American, obviously, but what they changed was very interesting. They changed it to say, and you might have heard this if you listen to these little Patriot radio shows all day, but they put in text that said, two American Airlines aircraft were hijacked during the September 11 terrorist attack, Flight 77 and Flight 11. Okay, that's what it said. Then it was added by someone at American Airlines, wrote this: although these flights were daily departures before and a month after September 11th, 2001, neither Flight 11 nor 77 were scheduled on September 11th, 2001. The records kept by the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, bts.gov/gis, do not list either flight that day. Now, first of all, the AA employee needed to check his punctuation. And then moving on, we can note that this actually was discovered, I would say, at least 4 years ago, maybe five, three at the least, 3 years ago to 5 years ago. And it was posted on the web by Gerard, I think, Holmgren. And anyway, he's from Australia, and he took it down, but you can still, he had a, I don't know, meltdown, 911movement.org, and you can find that there. So again, this is old news, but it's interesting now that it's kind of a reconfirmation by American Airlines that those flights were not scheduled that day. And again, they've changed the BTS data since then. They've massaged it some, but those are very important records for all the backroom negotiations about liability and bribes and payoffs. And you know what, if this is in the legal record, American can threaten the government with it for their payout. That's why, of course, the airlines got huge payouts right after 9/11. But anyway, old news, there was no Flight 11 or 77 on 9/11. And if you thought you saw one on TV, you were confused. Moving on, there's press release, more 9/11 type stuff. Obviously, this is all up at total411.info, which is the home website for this webcast, and the radio station is revereradio.net. You can go there, check that out. Maybe donate some money. Exposed DOJ hypocrisy and 9/11 state secrets claim. Again, this is from the former FBI translator, Sybil Edmonds, and she's just pointing out that the six gag orders that were put on her by the Supreme Court and the FBI because she wanted, she knows stuff about some of the financing of some of the neocons and, you know, how they were profiting and doing crap through Turkey, before 9/11. And, the DOJ said it was all secret, but now the same stuff that they wanted to jail her for and said was secret, they're kind of using the same facts, for their own, political ends, so you can check that out for the details. Morgan Reynolds filed a suit against NIST, the so-called Qui-Tam type lawsuit for all their lies and the report on the crash of the towers. You can check that out. He lists a bunch of co-defendants, including Applied Research Associates, and we've covered that little nexus on this program quite a lot. And it goes on, and if you tuned in last week, you heard the instant analysis of the Hearst Story Channel 9/11 conspiracies. And again, they just set up, they avoided the three big issues, which are the war games, the TV fakery, and the exotic indoor space weaponry. They totally avoided all that. And because they avoided the exotic weaponry, they were able to fairly effectively debunk the explosive myth. And for instance, they pointed out that the so-called squibs that are on a lot of the video are just dust being ejected from the building, from the vents, as the building above that part turns to dust. But of course, that begs the question, why the fuck is a building turning to dust from the top down? And that's because it's being disintegrated. And, you know, of course, also the amount of time and volume it would take to place all those explosives in the building. So they debunk the, what's, I guess, called the controlled demolition type straw man, by which is fine, but they avoided the real issue of the space weaponry. And, of course, the war games, and it goes on from there. So why don't we play one more song, and again the number is 1-877-REVERE-0, and then I'm going to play this lecture, which touches on, you know, centuries old geopolitics as well as the whole thing with cults of personality. And we will hear Armin Saganian right now.
He has authored several books and many articles on Iranian topics. He's thinking about joining us here in Washington as the president one time on a more permanent basis, since he's looking for accommodations here, which we're trying to help him with. And we're very pleased. Please welcome Armin Saganian. Thank you for being here. I presume that I have to talk while I'm standing, because otherwise I may fall asleep. In general, I am an unorthodox speaker. Usually I do not follow specific rules. I, so to speak, I shoot from the hip, and I don't really care who says what, because we are living in an era that we cannot afford not to be living. We are facing a very, very dangerous world. Unfortunately, most of the public is not aware, American public is not aware of the danger that we are facing. In my write-up, I said that I'll give a very short synopsis of the past and then talk about the future. I have to do it. Future usually stands on the basis of the past. Those who do not learn from the past, they will repeat the same mistake again. Unfortunately, we usually do not learn from the past. Usually our people become so arrogant with their power and with the knowledge that they think that they have, that they know everything that there is to be known, and our intelligence services are on a totally wrong road, going somewhere else. Therefore, the report that some is, or whoever makes a decision on the basis So whenever it comes to me, it comes to a problem that we face with something that comes later to hunt us. It was just said that shot was out and...
Okay, here's the quality audio.
Came back. Shot was out because the Iranian public voted the government in, that CIA did not like the government, and they took the Dr. Mossadegh's government out and brought Shah back, and this time Shah came with some other ideas. And unfortunately, money came also after 1962-63, and there was so much money in Iran that everybody was trying to grab a portion of it. And most of the Iranian public was not prepared for that kind of inflow of money and the outcome of corruption. And the whole thing blew up finally. We are facing a problem of Islam. I have to reflect on Islam a bit before I continue. Most of you used to think, at least, that Islam is a religion. Well, fortunately, the events of the past decade or so taught you that Islam is not just another religion. You learned it firsthand by experiencing it. Now, I will go back on Islam for 2-3 minutes. Muhammad was a very, very bright man, extremely bright man. He was born in a country that was very backward. The only thing good about that country at the time was that because of the wars between Byzantine Empire and Iranian Empire, most of the trade routes, especially silk trade routes, were closed, and most of the traders had to go through South Seas and come up through Arabia and go up. Therefore, Mecca became a center of the trade. And besides being a center of the trade, it was one more thing. The Kaaba that you see, the black stone in the middle of the central mosque in Mecca, that used to be the house of the Arabian idols. And all of the tribes used to keep their idols there. And from time to time, any tribe that had the power would take over the custodianship of the Kaaba. And by being custodian of the Kaaba, anybody who was coming for pilgrimage during the Hajj, they would come and pay homage to the idols as well as to the tribe that was custodian of the Kaaba. At that time, the tribe of Quraysh, from which Muhammad was born, was the custodian of the Kaaba. And Muhammad, being an orphan, his father died before he was born, his mother died when he was 6 years old. He went to live with his grandfather for about 2 years. Grandfather died. And then he went to live with his uncle, father of Ali. The name was Abi Talib. And Abi Talib was a tradesman in the sense that he was taking caravans from Mecca to Damascus. And he, for the first 4 years, put Muhammad to tend the goats and the camels. Then when Muhammad was 11 years old, he took him with him, going up to Damascus and back. Now, in those trips, going from Mecca to Damascus and back, as it was the old days in the United States, when they would come and make a corral and people would rest for the night and start again, they used to do the same thing also. At night, all the caravans would stop, build fires, and talk for a while before they went to sleep to start the next day again. During those sitting together, people would talk to each other. And there used to be Parsons, Christian Parsons, Israeli Parsons, and Zoroastrian Parsons. And Muhammad learned quite a bit about God, Christian God, Zoroastrian God, and Abraham's God. And as he went and came back, he started thinking that why do we worship idols? We should have our own God. He was a teenager when he started thinking about that and he started talking about that. In that house of idols, the greatest idol was named Allah. I'm not kidding you. You can open books and things also. And Allah had two daughters who later became other goddesses. But Muhammad decided that he's going to preach monotheism. And the best way to do was to do whatever comes naturally to his people. Now, look at it this way. The Hashemite, the largest tribe, is the tribe from which one of the branches is the Quraysh, where Muhammad comes from. Hashemite was ruling most of the northern Arabia. Muhammad started talking about monotheism till he became early 20 years old. At that time, he started really preaching. In the same time, in Iran, there is a war inside the Sasanid dynasty. And within the Sasanid dynasty, which was basically a Zoroastrian government, but at that time, Zoroastrianism had taken over the government, and it was a theocracy already. It was not just a ordinary government, it was a theocratic government. And Zoroastrian religion has several branches in it also, different sects. One of the sects was Mazdaki. They had special beliefs. And Shirvanshahgar was the king of Iran. He invites all the Mazdakis in by the persuasion of the Mughs, who were the heads of Zoroastrian religion, and he orders them all slaughtered in the palace. A small group of them ran away and went to Arabia. They came to Mecca and they saw Muhammad preaching and they found a guy that they thought it would be good to help him so that they can take their revenge from the Sasanid dynasty. This goes on as the time goes on. Muhammad comes who become a person who declares that he has been chosen by Allah to be the messenger of Allah, and messenger in Arabic is Rasul. So he calls himself Rasulullah, messenger of Allah. And he marries a very wealthy widow who was widowed four times, and from all those dead husbands she had received a hell of a lot of money. And Muhammad's life changes. He becomes very comfortable, very rich, and starts preaching. Of course, it does not go very well with his tribe, with Quraysh, because they were the custodians of the Kaaba. And as the religion goes on, they don't want monotheism, because if monotheism takes over, they lose all their income. Therefore, they threaten Muhammad that they are going to kill him. He runs away by the help of his uncle. Then he comes back again, and this time he goes further on. His uncle dies, his wife, the rich woman, dies, and he's left only with his close 13 friends, that is called Ashab, in Arabic meaning friends. He's threatened again, but this time the Quraysh gets together and says, okay, we are not going to threaten him or exile him out, we are going to kill him. Now, from this point on, two different points come in, or two different theories. One of them is this, that Muhammad put his cousin Ali in his bed, and with the rest of them out to Medina, and he started his religion, real religion there. And as far as I'm concerned, in the book that I wrote, Muhammad was killed in Mecca and he by his friends, and his friends took over and went to Medina, and an imposter declared himself as Muhammad and took the sword and started killing. The very first killing that Muhammad started was the annihilation of the tribe of Bani Ghariza of Israel, Jewish tribe that were very wealthy and living in Medina. They were trace people in Medina at the time. There were two Jewish tribes. We annihilated first one of them, then the second one. Bani Finga was the second. In his group of followers, three people were very, very, or rather four people, very, very important. One of them was his cousin Ali, who was a fierce fighter, a very cruel man. He was absolutely the slaughter master of the Arabic hordes. The other one was Omar. Omar was a very good general, a very good fighter, but as far as administration is concerned, forming government, forming armies, and forming all the hordes that he created for the Islamic hordes to conquer the world. And there was Osman, who was the person who collected all these verses and created the Quran long after Muhammad's death. So while Muhammad was alive, there was no Quran. And all the verses that he spoke as revelations coming to him, they were taken down by scribes, and he collected all those scripts and created the Quran. And actually, there were four Qurans. He burned out three Qurans to make sure that nothing remains from the others, and used only one that he wanted to use to conquer the world. Yeah.
Are you saying that Muhammad of Medina is an imposter?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. It is my...
Muhammad right now. You're talking about the imposter.
The imposter called himself Muhammad, yes. I have read the Quran three times in three different languages. I read it in Arabic, I read it in Farsi, I read it in English. Those two people don't match with each other. Allah changes, the words of Allah change, the orders that come in as verses change. So it cannot, you cannot accept that if there is God, there are two different gods, or God evolves into something else. Therefore, Allah has not changed. Whoever is saying the words of Allah has changed. And you cannot say that a person who has preached a certain way for 40 years, all of a sudden becomes a murderer, a thief, a plunderer. It is impossible to accept, but that's beside the point. Those are all old history. I'm just trying to bring you up to date. They came, they conquered the world, they plundered the world. They ruled Iran for 200 years. They took all North Africa. Any country that they conquered, they forced the people to accept Islam. If they don't accept Islam, they have either to pay very heavy taxes or be killed. From Iran, most of the Iranians who were Zoroastrians either changed religion or left Iran, went to India around Bombay, and they are the Parsis of Bombay that they live till today. They are Zoroastrians, they are very rich, very well-to-do, and they have kept all the old Iranian traditions. Iran was under the Islamic rule for 200 years, and in those 200 years, Arabs brought very many Arabs to come and live in Iran, mix with Iranian people. Egypt was done the same thing. Egypt lost everything, lost national identity, lost language, lost religion, lost everything. They became Arabs. The entire North Africa lost everything, became Arabs. The only country that did not lose everything was Iran. Iran kept its religious minorities, Christians stayed, some Zoroastrians stayed, some Jews stayed. Most of the Jews in Iran are the Jews that were liberated from Babylon by Cyrus the Great. So Iran lost its, so to speak, national identity, but more troublesome thing that they lost was the pride of their own nationality, of their, who they are. The whatever Cyrus the Great or people of the Achaemenids or the Sassanid did, you don't see that kind of great activities anymore after the Islam came over. So Iran was subdued for quite a long time. Not much activity came about until Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth I, signed the East India Trading Company Treaty. By that, Queen Elizabeth created a trading company in India for basically two purposes. To rob India and get all that money from India to support the world government of the British Empire. And that's exactly what they did. The East India Company ruled India as if it was their personal property. Indians were their servants. They were subhuman. And India could not, Indian could not pass a British man without calling him Sahib, meaning master. Till today, they call British Sahib. That situation created a big problem in the countries that Britain took over, cut to pieces, to make sure that they had several different countries surrounding India, so that anybody who was trying to come and take India, they could not come and attack and take over. They had to conquer those small countries one by one before they could get. It was a very good, brilliant plan that they did. Unfortunately, in order to do that, they created several things. One of the things that they created was the Ikhwan al-Muslimin, the Brotherhoods of Islam. That's the, one of the most dangerous things that there are in the world. The other one was the Wahhabis that came out of the Sunnis. The other one that was created by Khomeini. It is not Ikhwan al-Muslimin, it's Baradaran Islam. It is almost ending in Farsi. We had that kind of activities in Islam in old Iran. Hassan Sabbah was one of them. Hassan Sabbah created, it's the seventh imam of the Shias. They end up at the seventh imam. They don't go up to 12 imams. And Ismail was the seventh imam. And Hassan Sabbah was the head of it. And the word that you use in English, assassin, comes from whatever they used to be. They used to take hashish. And they used to call themselves hashishin. It turned out to assassin, and means people who get drunk and are ready to kill for whatever they have been ordered to do. That is the situation that was created. But more or less, British Empire was able to keep all that anger within the Islamic organization that they had created subdued. Until several white guys thought that in order to not to spend the American life in getting information as to what's going on in Soviet Union, and in order not to have personal spies, we could do it by satellites, we could do by mechanism, not human beings. We lost the contact with the world, with the truth as to what's going on in the world. And we became a country whose intelligence services were not getting first-hand intelligence service from anywhere. It was a, whatever they could assume, this is what the satellite shows, so maybe that's going, what's going on over there, or what's going on over there. We lost contact from the reality that was going on. And as such, in order to maintain the spread of the communism. They thought that's the best thing to do, some bright-eyed fellow, either Brzezinski or Cyrus Vance. They thought that the best thing to do is to create a green belt around Soviet Union. And in order to create a green belt, they thought that they will give power to the subdued Islamic militants and let them come to power. And one of those guys was the old servant of Great Britain by the name of Khomeini. Now, Khomeini was not the first one. His father was British servant, his grandfather was British servant, and his grandfather was sent from Pakistan, today's Pakistan, which at that time is India, to Iran to create this new movement, Islamic movement. So we have a new Islamic movement brewing in Iran under the auspices of Khomeini and his group. Khomeini probably would not have been that angry with Shah had his son not been killed by the Savak. Now, please don't, when I say the word Savak, don't think that Savak was a murderous organization. Sure, they killed about 130 people. That's all they have killed. The rest of it is all built up thing that was built up by a group of Iranian students in the United States and all over the world that were united together by the money that was paid to them by KGB, by CIA, by British intelligence, and they were called the Iranian Student Confederation, or in their way, Confederacion. That's what they call themselves. There are still some members of Confederacion around here in the United States, in France, in Iran, everywhere. Most of the Mujahideen were Confederation. Most of the Fedayeen were Confederation members. They were students who came to the United States, to Europe, and at the time Shah was sending at the rate of about 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 students a year out to study. They went out, they became rebels against Shah. I'm not trying to defend Shah. That's not my point. But the point is as to how this trouble was brewing. Finally, they decided that they are going to do it, and they sent a nice American gentleman to go and agree with Khomeini under an apple tree in Paris that they will give him power in Iran if he goes, and that's what they want him to do. So, my dear friend's benefactor was the one who went and talked to Khomeini, and Khomeini was sent to Iran. And when he entered Iran, he said that I am going to go to Qom. I have nothing to do with the government. Iran is going to have its own government and rule itself. And I am going to have the people become real true Islam. Now, in the same time, three other main powers are working in the Islamic group in Iran. One of them is Khomeini himself. The other one was Beheshti, who came from Germany. He was teaching religion in Germany. The other one was Sharif Madari, who was teaching in Qom and in Tabriz in Iran. And the other one was Muntazeri, another crazy fellow. Muntazeri is alive now in Tehran. Shariat Madari is dead, and Beheshti, with all his group, was blown up by Khomeini's group. There were about 360-some people who were attending a meeting, and Khomeini had them all blown up. So Khomeini eliminated all the opposition, and he came to power as sole power, placing Shah with total power to do whatever he damn well pleases. There was no constitution, nothing. He was a sole commander. In 1996, I sent a letter to the United States Senate, to National Endowment for Democracy. It was a 34-page report telling them what's coming. And I asked them for help to try to stop this movement. They answered me back, and the answer was that it's a religious matter, and United States Senate is not involved in religion, and we have nothing to do. Okay, I sent them another letter. So this one was only 2 pages, and that was called Why Islamic Renovation, and sent it in. No answer came to that. That was the end of our communication with U.S. government. From that point on, my file with the FBI is that thick. I have seen it. My file with the CIA is that thick. I haven't seen it, but they have told me. My file with the Defense Intelligence Agency is about that thick. I have seen it. They have shown it. That in Pentagon. They know what I do. They have been involved with everything that I do. They have never helped us in any way. But we had to do something. Now, from this point on, I'm coming to the current thing as to what's going on. I left Iran in, well, if you read over here, it says that I was over there on a project of $35 billion trying to renovate the 66,000 villages in Iran that were living in dark ages. And the unit, the Total Energy System unit that we put at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, I told our company that they will be better off if, instead of trying to sell military stuff to Iran, to go ahead and renovate Iranian villages, we'll be making a lot more money and we'll have a good ally for ourselves. In the initial report in 1973, they told me you went to Iran and you smoked hashish and you became crazy, you lost your mind. But in 1975, they forced me to go back to Iran. I accepted to go on that program. It took me about 2 years to sell the project, the idea, to 7 ministries of the Iranian government, have the Iranian National Oil Company sign the $30 billion project. In 10 years, it would have been done, finished, and at the end of 10 years, Iran would have been totally self-sufficient in everything that they needed. Well, in that project, there were going to be 7 Iranian ministries, there were going to be 7 Iranian corporations, huge big corporations. There were going to be corporations from 4 other countries, United States, Britain, Germany, and Japan. And the whole thing, by the time it finished, would have cost probably maximum about $60 billion in 1975 dollars. The contract was supposed to be signed on the 12th of December. On the 10th of December, I received a letter saying that because of the situation in Iran, they are not going to stop in Iran. They are going to pass over and go to Geneva. They will meet me in Geneva. And that was the end of that project, and everything went kaput. And I came back to the United States thinking that I am not going to go back to Iran anymore. That was 1979. 1981, my cousin, who was deputy of Armenians in the Iranian parliament, he came to the United States and called me in and said that I've been asked by the opposition to go and work with them to topple the government. I don't have neither the physical stamina to go nor the funds to sustain. Therefore, would you be willing to be the delegate of Armenians to go in? Well, I had an account to settle. I said, yes, I will. So, as of 1981, I joined the opposition to topple the government. I worked with Dr. Abi Amini. I worked with Dr. Shahrukh Bakhtiar. I worked with Dr. Ahmed Madani. I worked with Dr. Manoucher Ganji for 16 years. And after 16 years, I sat down, why, with all this trial, all this effort, how come we don't get to a result? How come we don't succeed? All what we do is good. I stopped all operations, and for 3.5 months, I analyzed the situation. Now, for you to know as to What I mean by analyze is this. By training, I'm a mathematician, I'm a mechanical engineer, I'm a business manager. In mechanical engineering, my expertise was in system effectiveness. If people like me did not exist, Apollo 13, when it exploded up in space, those, all of them would have been dead. People like us analyzed the situation from here, located the problem there, and told them what to do to calm down. So doing system analysis for system effectiveness is a natural thing for me. It's by training. For 20 years I have done that. Doing fault tree analysis, making math models for all those different systems, and making sure that the system works and it's not failed, it's a very simple thing, but all it takes is training and experience. Okay. With all that experience, I applied myself for 3.5 months and finally came to a conclusion as to why it doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work because those people are over there just to receive money from CIA at the rate of $350,000 a month, doing nothing, absolutely nothing. And by doing nothing, they have created a hell of a lot of hullabaloo inside Iran and have cost the lives of more than 2 million Iranian youth who followed that stupid orders from encouragements from United States, go ahead and do, we are behind you. No help came, they did whatever they did. The entire Iranian Air Force pilots were eliminated in one day. 370 first class pilots.
Oh.
All of them gathered in one place, ready to start the revolution, and Khomeini people were told that they are gathered over there, close to Hamadan in Nojeh. They came in and killed all of them in one place. You wouldn't, it will be very difficult for you people to think as to what happens. As to those guys who are running things in, for this government outside of the United States, what kind of atrocities do they commit? And why do we get the name of ugly America? Remember one thing. First World War is over. Americans in Iran had 6 colleges. In 3 cities, 2 colleges in each city. 2 colleges in Tehran, 2 colleges in Tabriz, 2 colleges in Hamadan. And they were the most benevolent people who came to Iran to help the Iranian people. The best hospitals in Iran were the American hospitals. The best schools in Iran were the American schools. The best material in Iran for help were the Americans. Everything was good about Americans, and people were absolutely in love with America. Nothing could be wrong with America. Church is excellent. The hospital is excellent. College is excellent. Food is excellent. Everything is excellent. Well, all that changed. All that changed and became the black sheep of the world. And I'm going to say something that I cannot substantiate it, but I can say it. Believe it or not, it wouldn't make any difference. Britain is taking its revenge of American Revolution from us.
Okay.
Believe me, they are. They are making us the ugliest thing in the world. Whenever they want to create problem, they create problem and they get us involved and they get our ass kicked over there, making sure that we are not going to win. They send us to Korea, we get our ass kicked in Korea. They send us to Vietnam, we get the same problem in Vietnam. They send us to Yugoslavia, we get the same problem in Yugoslavia. They send us to North Africa, we get the same problem in North Africa. Right now we are in Iraq. And if we don't do something, believe me, if we don't do something, if we commit another mistake and bomb Iran or enter Iran, it's going to be worse. If we send soldiers to Iran, they are going to be slaughtered. If we bomb Iran and eliminate 28 cities in Iran, we are going to be the I don't know, I don't have words for it. We will be the most cruel people in the world. Bombing and killing people up. 28 cities, for what? They have done nothing. They are following up the orders of whatever have been dictated to them. All the group that is ruling Iran, they are the luckies of Great Britain. I'm sorry to say that. I have nothing against Britain itself. The British people are wonderful people. But the British intelligence has been running that country for years. They, as of the time that they put that East India Trading Company in India, they have been running the whole world crazy.
Yeah.
We are in a troubled time. We are facing a very, very big problem. If we don't do something, and if this administration follows the route that they are taken, they go and do whatever they are planning to do, at least whatever they being said that they are going to have either Israelis bomb, nuke Iran, or they are going to do, they have the entire navy in the Persian Gulf. If that happens, I would be sorry to be both Iranian and American. I am an American now. But I would hate to identify myself as American. This is what we did. We killed 5 million, 10 million people. I mean, poisoned the whole country, poisoned India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, the whole area. Time and again, our people, yes.
They were saying that Israel is in Iraq.
28 cities in Iraq, and Iranian government in Iran, government has put all those centrifuge facilities close to major cities. If you want to bomb them, have you ever seen centrifuge? Or do you know how they work? Because they are tubes, long tubes, all the facilities. I have worked on the centrifuges in Garrett Corporation in Los Angeles. All the facilities are underground.
By the way, you don't quite understand it, but yeah. Well, yeah,
they are all underground, and the basic reason is that underground, if they crash, crashing is, means that the centrifuges are, I will not say what the diameter is, but they are diameters and very long tubes. Something is turning very fast inside, very fast. And crashing means that for some reason it gets out of bounds and crashes down. And since you have gas inside, all freon gas mixed with some nuclear material, it will poison the area. Therefore, it's all underground. I cannot say everything out, but I can just give you an image as to what it is. Just imagine, take a pencil and enlarge the pencil to be, let's say, 50 feet long and diameter in the same proportion. You will have that kind of a thing that is turning. It's actually centrifuge. Same thing that they used to take cream out of the milk in a smaller thing. Cream, because of being lighter, then the milk goes up and right. Same thing, the heavier nuclear material goes up and it's gathered out and taken it out. Exactly. All those facilities are underground. And in order to heat those facilities and eliminate them, it will be almost the same thing that happened in 1981 in Iraq when Israel went and bombed. It's almost the same thing. That was in one place, out away from cities, but this time Iranians put it next to the cities, so that if you bomb, you are going to damage the cities or kill the people of the cities. Therefore, you become the real
great
devil.
Satan.
The pardon?
Great Satan.
Yeah, Great Satan. Yeah, you will become Great Satan.
The casualty or fatality estimates that you and I have heard and the others have verified from ex-Savak sources and others is at least 5 million fatalities.
Yeah.
If Israel or the U.S. bomb the Iranian nuclear facilities
over there than the ones over here.
Now, as to what could be done, after putting brakes on whatever we're doing and analyzing as to why things don't work, we finally came to the conclusion that since those who are supposed to know what they are doing and they don't do, we have to do something. If the governments don't do, we have to do. Since government don't listen to us, believe me, we have people who have gone to Pentagon. I have gone to Pentagon 3 times. Other people have gone to Pentagon.
Did
I have
gone to the Pentagon anymore?
Beg pardon?
Did they let you into the Pentagon?
My what?
When you go to the Pentagon, did they let you in?
No. I haven't tried. After the last time, it was before 9/11. After the last time, I wouldn't go anymore because it is like going over there. I have good words. I will not use good words. No, it's useless. It really is useless because very politely they receive you, very politely they listen to you, and very politely they bid you goodbye, and after you go, everything is done and finished and forgotten. Nothing.
You never hear from them again.
Never. Never. Never.
And all of the stuff that you brought up, which they were very, very interested while you were there, never happened.
No. Now, we came together, several of us, thinking as to what could be done, what should be done. Since Europe will not do it because Europe is making like a bandit. Europe is making money like you wouldn't believe. The United States, although they think we don't have any trade, but hell, we don't have any trade. All the trade that they are doing with Iran is doing by their subsidiaries in England and Germany and France. The companies are making money, yes. Now, for example, we used to assemble Netflix in Iran. The same facility is assembling Volvo in Iran. Guess who owns Volvo? American companies. It's a Swedish company, but it's owned by Americans. We are assembling other stuff. Most of those companies that are doing business in Iran under the name of the European companies, they are owned by the American companies. Jaguar is owned by the American companies. The Mazda is owned by American companies. More than half of the Toyota is owned by American companies. All those Toyota cars in Iran, they are all sold to them by the Japanese subsidiary of American companies. So the trouble is that the people of the United States do not know the truth. Okay, we assume that there is nothing we can do with American companies. There is nothing we can do at all with the U.S. government. They are not going to listen to us. At least we as United States citizens, we have the right to think freely. We have the right to talk freely. Right now I'm talking to you freely. Nobody has stopped me. If they want to stop me, they can stop me.
He's recording the whole thing.
Yeah. Did you take the call?
No, she knows I'm recording this.
That's quite all right. Yeah. I am no worry. By the way, for your knowledge, I have been approached by the Islamic Center in Los Angeles only once. I received a call. They said that we want to come and see you. The name of the place is Bunyadi Iman. It is on Motor Avenue. Fine, come over. They came and they were 2 engineers. At the time, there was 1 engineer with me from oil company. Those who were from oil company also, they knew each other. We went out for lunch and they said, well, we are here only to ask you, what? They said, well, we are here to ask you to calm down in your writings. Mm-hmm. I asked them, from everything that I have written, was it a lie? No, there was nothing left. Okay, according to Sharia, you have nothing against me. Whatever I've written is the truth, and there is nothing you can do. If you can find a single lie, you can cut my throat the way Muslims do. They cut it to life from Islam. They never came back. They stopped. The point is that when you stand up to them, and you are on your right ground, there's nothing they can do. If they are true Muslims, there's nothing they can do. If they attack me verbally, you Christian? I'm not Christian. What are you? I said, well, as far as you are concerned, I could be a Muslim, because for a Muslim person, for a person to be Muslim, there are several things he has to do. Either he has to say his ashhad. Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is Allah's messenger. If I say that, I have gone half the way. The other thing I have to do is I have to fast, which I don't. I have to do namaz, prayers. Yeah, if they are requiring their members to pray 5 times a day, believe me, I pray at least 20 times a day. Every single step I take, not to Allah, but please, brain, show me the way. I don't want to make mistakes, because it's every single mistake in my part may cause a hell of a lot of lives. And the other thing has to do, I'm sorry to say, has to be circumcised. I'm circumcised, so I'm clear. Therefore, I'm no problem. Now, what we can do basically is this. Whatever I'm going to tell you is from this point on to future. In order to stop this madness, one basic thing has to happen. And the basic thing is composed of several things. There has to be a solid base ready to rebel. We have that inside the world. There have to be 3 columns that we have the design, we have the people, we have everything. We need the money to get those 3 things erected. Those 3 things are intelligence service, we have it. We have the people. Inside Iran, outside Iran, in the United States, all over the world. We have all the members of the old SAVAK working with us. We need the military organization. We have it. We have all the old military. We have all the new military that is serving the Iranian government right now. They are ready to topple it. The third one is the logistics of all these groups to work together and to be able to sustain themselves. Those 3 needs help, and main thing that comes to hold this together, 3 columns standing, you have the base is concrete, is there. 3 columns, it's all planned to stand. We need a top to hold it together, and that top is the help from the foreign countries, not the government, foreign people, Americans, British, Germans, French, Russians, Chinese, Japanese, to get rid of this blooming thing before it creates a worst problem that we have ever had before. Because if you think that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bad, the 28 cities being blown up will be 14 times worse, or much, much worse than that. So far, the U.S. government or agencies of U.S. government has been successful in stopping from us getting our message out. I'm right now in a haven of the free press. I'm talking to the people who are associated with press. I have put my life on the line. I don't mind. Paraphrasing the words of a person, I wish I had more than one life. I'm not kidding you. This type of a thing is worth dying for. I will gladly die for it if I'm sure that we will succeed. We have to free the world from this menace. Islam, if it was only Islam of Mecca, is a benevolent religion. There is not a single verse in verses of Mecca starting with Oktolu. Oktolu in Arabic means kill them. It's a direct order from Allah, kill them. If that's the guide of Allah that there is, I don't want that Allah. But the verses of Mecca are not like that. Verses of Mecca are very benevolent.
What are the verses of Mecca? Are you talking about the Quran?
No, it's in Quran. If you open the Quran, chapter by chapter, it will say this chapter was given in Mecca, this chapter was given in Medina. That the son of a so-and-so, Usman, did a very good job of mixing them together so that any ordinary reader cannot distinguish. But people who translate the Quran, if you take any Quran in translation in English, on every chapter it will say on the top whether it was in Mecca or Medina. And by that you can tell exactly what it is. Now, I have done one more thing, which is a devilish thing that I have done. I wrote a letter to Ayatollah Muntazirin. He is the hated and shunned the way Ayatollah of the Iranian government. This is what I told him. I have the letter over here. I'll give you the letter and I'll give you the translation. I have a lot of paper over here that I'll give you. I told him that one morning I was awakened by four figures who stood in front of me. And those figures, their heads were all in light. Now, the reason I'm saying this to them is because the entire Islam religion is based on revelations. The entire thing is revelations. Nothing but revelations. Therefore, okay, it was revelation to me. If you don't accept my revelation, I don't accept your revelation either. Therefore, they couldn't. I wrote a letter. That those four figures came, and the figure in front represents a young woman, Qum. Oh, you believer, stand up. Arabic I know what it means. I got up. I don't know very well Arabic, but I know enough. So what he said. I got up and said, Mu'anta, what are you? And he answered me, Ana Muhammad ibn Abdullah. I am Muhammad son of Abdullah, Rasulullah, messenger of Allah. Wa anta Armand ibn Yusuf, and you son of Yusuf, Armand, Muntakhab wa Maksuli, my chosen and my messenger. I want you to take this message to my people. I told him I don't know enough Arabic to understand you. He said, again in Arabic, فَأَبْحَمْ. Therefore, understand. From that point on, our conversation went, I'm telling him in the letter, our conversation went telepathy or whatever. We understood each other. He said, I've given you orders to separate the Quran of Mecca from Medina and publish it and give it out. Why didn't you do it? I said, well, I did the separation, yes. I got the translation, yes. I got translation in 31 languages, yes. But I don't have the money to publish it. He said, okay, then write that to Muntazari and have him solve that problem for you. Therefore, I'm writing you this letter. I send that letter to Muntazari. About 4 days later, answer came back from Muntazari. Two-line answer. Very political answer. The first line says, the content of your letter is not right. It doesn't say you are lying or you are dreaming or whatever. It's not right. And second is the most important thing. It does not have calling of the time. What the devil does that mean? In other words, it says, don't shake the boat or don't create problem for us. Don't rock the boat. Okay, then I stop that.
Another way of translating that is the time is not right for what you're saying, correct?
That's what it means. Yeah. In Farsi, if you take it literally, that's exactly what it means. So, as far as I'm concerned, since the American government will not do anything, and since the Iranian government will not do anything, and since the Ayatollah has bowed out without calling me a liar or sending the putting a fatma on my head, he cannot do that, because that will be against the Sharia. He cannot do that. He's on an impasse. I checkmated him. in that letter. But I also am checkmated unless we get our plan in action.
What plan is that?
Hmm?
What plan is that?
The plan is this. We have a plan that answers 72 problems. I will give all those things to you, people, you can take it home. The dossier is about that, whatever I'm giving you, it's a digest of the whole thing. The actual thing is 3 volumes at 5th thick each. It's... You were saying something?
No, she did.
Oh. Well, 72 is significant, 40 is significant, 70 is significant, yeah, it is. The 72 is significant because of the 72 stupid guys who got killed with the thing in the Karbala. And do you know the story of as to why that killing took place?
72 virgins.
No. 72 virgins are the virgins that they are promised to me. If I do whatever they tell me, I go to that. Every single day they give me 72 virgins, or they have good seamstresses to do the damage that I do. I'm sorry for going like that, but it is the situation. I told you I'm an unorthodox speaker, and I speak out exactly as it is. I will not euphemize. I will not use any other words. That's the way it is. The 72 people were the people who died with... Ali San Hussein in Karbala, and that's why Karbala is so famous for them. And the cause of that fight and death was this. Hussein had stolen Bani Umayyad's wife, who was a beautiful woman, and would not return him. Bani Umayyad told him, if you don't return my wife, I'm going to come and do this and that to you. He said, come and let's see. And he came up with several thousand soldiers and killed all of them. That was the stupidity until today. Sunnis and Shias are fighting over that stupid thing. That's not religion. It's whatever it is, stupidity. You ask us to insanity. You ask us to what the plan is. The plan is to get the people of Iran united to do whatever they must do. Most of the people of Iran are willing to do what they will not do for one basic reason. They say that, okay, we fought with Saddam Hussein, and anytime we move anything, Americans inform the Saddam Hussein as to what we are moving. We don't believe Americans. We don't believe that the American government would help us, and whatever we do, American government will do exactly the opposite to eliminate us. Well, all Europe will not do, because all Europe is making money like crazy. It is up to the people of Iran to do whatever they should do, and we have all the plans as to how they can do. That will require somewhere between $25 to $50 million to get that started. From that point on, it will be self-sustaining, self-generating. It will accomplish the job. And as to how we can do, how, when I say we, especially, I mean me and him over there, Tom. Tom is working with me on this also, and I have committed myself, I have committed my wife, I am going to do it. If my wife was not there, probably I would have been dead and gone. My wife sustains me, my wife supports me, my wife does everything for me. She's an angel, absolute angel. Although she doesn't believe in whatever I do, but she does whatever I need to help me to do whatever I'm doing. But there is a way to do, and the only way is, we believe, is the way that we have decided. And fortunately, this is what is the most heartwarming part of it. I meet people day by day, Iranian people, who say, oh, after listening, fine, sign me in, I am part of it. I had one of those this morning. I had 3 of them day before yesterday. Both of them are over here, and there are very many in Los Angeles. Just to clarify your minds, Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi is not part of it, because he is another member of that cartel who is robbing Iran. His mother is another one of those. We have had meetings with her 5 times. The longest meeting was 5.5 hours. And 2 statements of hers clarified for me as to where she stands. Item number 1 was, why should I do all this? What do I do with my son? In other words, her thought, first thought with her son rather than the country. And the last statement before departing said that with people who have treated us like leopards, why should we do that? Okay, she clarified his position. Reza Pahlavi arranged meeting with us 8 times. We went there and he did not come. The very first time was about 14 years ago in Washington. We came to Washington and his head of the staff met us and said, sorry, he's gone. I am here to talk to you. Come here, call him King and we'll help you in whatever it takes. Huh? No, no. His name was Ruhi. He's dead and gone. No, OAC is part of the organization. Daman Bachman College is part of the organization. All that people who are surrounding him are part of the organization. They are over there. They are getting money from all the Emirates. This I learned all this morning. They are getting somewhere between $25 to $30 million a year from the Arab countries, from Saudi Arabia, from Emirates, from even the IRA. So basically, I am committed to do a work that some people call me crazy for it. I don't consider myself crazy, believe me, I don't. I owe a debt to the nation. First, the nation that took me in, this nation. I don't want any more American blood spilled, neither in Iraq nor in Iran. Why should they? Second, to the people who raised my country, to all countries. So, I close my speech. I hope that I did not disagree with the things that I said. I am repeating again, we are facing a great big danger. We are facing people who are willing to die to go to paradise. You cannot fight that kind of thing. Thank you.
I want to thank you very much. Now, we certainly don't think you're crazy, and we want to reassure you that all of us here remain undiagnosed. but thank you very much. Do you have some literature you want to pass around?
Yes, I do.
And then maybe some of you would like to just meet with him privately later. And, by the way, be sure to have our little red book taken care of, and we'll be notifying you about the next one.
I have a question. I'm sorry.
Sure.
My question.
Yes.
Again. I'm very intrigued by the whole to Muhammad idea from Mecca. Where do you think the second one came from? Was it by Rome or what? Where did this imposter Muhammad come from?
I really truly do not know, but I believe one thing. After doing what they did for 13 years and not succeeding, they decided that the only way to succeed is by robbing other people and killing people and confiscating whatever they have. And that's why they got together and killed Muhammad and did whatever they did.
They,
those 13 people who were his followers. Ali.
Do you think it's his own disciples installed?
The disciples were the ones who killed one of them. Yeah, they did, because from that point on they became rich. Those are the constitutions that have been written for the future Iran in 2 different forms. One form is in form of the republic, the other form is in the form of a constitutional monarchy. The Iranian people have to decide either this way or the other way.
And there you go. That was Armin Saganian at the press club. So it's been a long night on Total Information Radio here on the Revere Radio Network. the worldwide home of free speech. And can you hear me? Okay. Anyway, I did some research. I don't know if you heard the story, but there was a senator arrested in a airport bathroom. If you run the timeline on that, and this is about to go up at total411.info, but this guy voted against the amnesty police state immigration bill, and then on the way home, flying back to his home state, he's arrested in the airport bathroom. So, and then he turns around, and 2 weeks later, he votes for the immigration police state bill. So the timeline suggests a blackmail setup. So check out total411.info. And, I think we're going to wrap it up tonight because the phones aren't even open. Unless you know the secret number. So, stay tuned to Revere Radio Network all night. We're going to have a wicked informative playlist for you. And also LibertyStickers.com. That's the other new sponsor I failed to mention at the top of the show. So, rock on with all that. And peace out.
Committed to true free speech, even when it's ugly. You're listening to the one and only Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
RevereRadio.net.
Weird Magazine has your ass covered on what's popping this month in the national music scene. What bartenders are hot? Where are the